be broadcasting to the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish people. On unceded airwaves, we cover current events. I don't have much to say for right now, but I would like to promote the Tuesday night powwow that takes place every single Tuesday at the Vancouver Aboriginal Friendship Center at 1607 East Hastings. It's really cool, and you should check it out. Before we get into today's episode, I've got a few ads and a promo to play, but after that, we'll get right into it.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
Just a few words before I go to sleep. I feel like I'm going to dream tonight. Big bad ones, you know? The kind you like.
There is a lot of music out there, but only some is strange enough for you. My name is B, and on SlimeWire, I do the work for you, picking out freaky tunes to rule your nighttime world. So check it out every Wednesday at 10 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC. Firstly, before we get into everything else, we're going to talk about our family histories. Let's start with Olivia.
My name is Olivia. As you know, I get my Métis status through my grandpa. And historically, my ancestors have come from Red River, and then my closer ancestors are from Lac La Biche. So that would be like my great-great-grandmother and great-great-grandpa. And historically, my great-great-grandpa has like history of Scrip, but especially my great-great-grandma has like so much history of Scrip. I was actually talking to my mom today, and she sent me so much information on her of like... she had once a Scrip history that was like for $160 of allowance, which was like wild to think about. But yeah, that's basically my history. I still have so much to learn, but yeah.
That's very relatable. I did an art piece in like 2019 and I forget what it was called, but it was about how Métis identity includes a really surprising amount of paperwork. And it was talking about how it was the Métis flag with a bunch of pictures of my family and then all of our documents. So it's just like a huge combination collab kind of thing in the back. But now we're going to get into our family history. So Ethan and I are Otipemiswak and Nihiowak. Otipemiswak is a Nihiowawan Plains Cree word for the Métis people. It means the ones who govern themselves. Nihiowak is the plural term for the Nihio people, which is the word that we Plains Cree people actually refer to ourselves as. On our grandpa's birth certificate, it says he was born in the district of Assiniboia, which was the census term for Red River, and it was really loosely used. Our family descends from Mistahi Maskwa, Chief Big Bear of Treaty 6, which he was forced into signing, by the way, and the Métis poet Pierre Falcon, who is the composer of the Métis cultural anthem La Chanson de Grenouille. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Our dad got Métis citizenship through Heritage Council in the late 90s, early 2000s, I think. And our grandpa was sent to the Kamloops Indian Residential School when he was a kid, and our dad was the victim of the 60s scoop, though he was not adopted out, and he was returned home. Our parents were Indigenous foster parents in the 90s to, I think our dad stopped doing it last year, to take care of Indigenous foster children with a focus on reunification, maintenance of cultural influence, and community in the kids' lives. Because of this, Ethan and I were raised going to pretty much every Indigenous event we could. We were raised with Seal culture and in Siltchen language.
Yeah, shout out to Aboriginal Education. Loved that as a kid. Anyways.
Many, many good memories. So we'll get into Louis Riel, Gabrielle Dumont, and Métis history. Do you want to start us off, Olivia?
Sure. So to start us off, the Métis Nation emerged in the 18th century as a result of interactions between indigenous peoples, primarily the Cree and Ojibwe, and European fur traders and settlers, primarily of French and Scottish descent.
Our family, like Ethan and I, descends from Les Filles du Roi, which were the daughters of the king, and they were sent from France to balance out the ratio of women and men in the settlements. Do you have any comments on that?
I'm just learning this right now. Really? I didn't know this part.
So we were talking earlier before we hit record about how our dad just drops lore really randomly, and that was one of the ones he dropped to me really randomly a few years ago, was that we descend from Les Filles du Roi. So they were sent over because the men were taking over here, and they were really lonely. So that's... Mm. Yeah.
We could get into settler homosocial spaces. I talked about that in the history. Never mind. Anyways, this is family lore I'm learning right now, but it's constant. Sometimes you miss out when dad drops the lore randomly.
Métis culture evolved through the blending of indigenous and European traditions. Our distinct way of life, including a unique language called Michif, clothing and cuisine developed during this period. Due to quote, half-breeds being unwelcome from both sides, Métis people developed a distinct sense of self-government and sovereignty. When I'm talking to people, especially Americans, I describe Métis as similar to mestizos of Mexico, and they seem to be like, oh, and suddenly understand like how a syncretic culture can work.
Yeah, so Métis played a crucial role in the fur trade history as skilled hunters, trappers, and guides. Our knowledge of the land and ability to adapt to different environments made us valuable intermediaries in the fur trade that existed in Canada. A big part of us is the Red River Resistance, which starting in 1869 and ended in the 1870s, the Métis Nation faced significant challenges to our land rights and way of life. The Red River Resistance of 1869 to 1870, led by the figures like Louis Riel, a very notable one, resulted in the creation of Manitoba as a province and recognition of the Métis land claims. He still has not been exonerated by the Canadian government. We'll move on to the Northwest.
Yeah, so in 1885, another conflict known as the Northwest Resistance, led by Louis Riel, erupted in what is now Saskatchewan and Alberta. It was sparked by issues such as land disposition and grievances related to governance. The Métis were ultimately defeated, and Riel was executed at the hands of the Canadian government on November 16, 1885. This was because of how defiant to the colonial settler state the Métis Nation under Riel was. If the Métis Nation won the fight for independence, what we know as Canada today would look very different.
Over the years, Métis leaders and organizations worked towards gaining legal recognition for the Métis Nation as separate from the Dominion of Canada. This culminated in the landmark Supreme Court decision, such as the 2016 Daniels case, which affirmed that Métis and non-status Indians, quote, are under federal jurisdiction. This is still kind of a gray area today.
Yeah, the term Métis scrip refers to a historical system in Canada that involves the issuance of land certificates or vouchers to the Métis people in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. These scrip certificates were intended to provide compensation to the Métis for the loss of our traditional lands and rights as a result of government policies and land dispossession.
The Métis had traditionally occupied lands in Western Canada, but as settlers and the Canadian government expanded westward, the Métis were displaced from their ancestral land. Scrip was seen as a way to address our land loss. Because the Métis did not meet the legal requirements of white society or Indian society, this led to the sense of self-government that defines Métis people. It's unlikely that the Métis Nation would have become what it is today without this kind of oppression within the legal system.
Métis script certificates were vouchers or documents that could be exchanged for land or money. They were typically issued based on an individual's status as Métis and their connection to the historic Métis homeland. There were different types of script, including half-breed script and Indian half-breed script, each with its own eligibility criteria and purposes. Indian half-breed script was given to individuals described as, quote, living amongst Indians. Well, I could be wrong. I believe our family had both half-breed and half-breed Indian script. Script documents for Métis people are something that's, it's so hard to read. There's so many of it. It's PDFs or it's something scanned and it's really hard to read and it gets so complicated, but it means a lot to us for just our general sense of identity.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in quickly because I found out this was interesting, but on the script of my great-great-grandmother, it says half-breed, but on what it's documented under, it says French half-breed, which I found super interesting. Kind of weird to think about, but very interesting, which
yeah,
I just found out. So.
It makes me think about what we're going to get into later in the episode, which is why are there so many Métis frauds and fakes? And I feel like a part of that is some of these people do have Métis heritage, but I theorize that they come from the half-breed script, and like you said, that if that is another category with like French half-breed script, I feel like a lot of those people descend from solely that, like that much more Europeanized side of being Métis. And if you descend from the more, quote, Indian side of being Métis and those script documents, you experience much more generational oppression and we're much more likely visible people of color compared to what they deemed with the other script. So I feel like it was such a big means of categorization, but then today, with all of us just falling under the category of Métis, I feel like it does kind of ignore the different histories that our families have.
Yeah. I mean, scripts are confusing. It's almost like these colonial systems don't make sense, but yeah, while it aimed to provide compensation, many Métis people received inadequate or unfair amounts of scrip. Some disputes and legal battles surrounding scrip persist to this day, and from what I've actually learned in, like, my history classes as well, is a lot of the times if you wanted to receive your scrip, you had to travel for a long time and very far to the, I think it was like the commissioner's office or the Indian agent, and oftentimes they weren't there, and they did not really, it was not a facilitated process.
Today, the Métis Nation is a recognized Indigenous group in Canada with distinct rights, or lack thereof, and cultural identity. We have our own government and leaders, such as the Métis National Council. We also have Métis settlements. I'm not sure the exact number, but a majority of them are in Alberta. And they operate in this really interesting middle ground between Chief and Council and First Nations government and the British colonial legal system. It's a really interesting intersection. But soon, we'll get into East Coast Métis and the new wave of colonialism from modern Métis government. It's time for a music break, and you'll be hearing Don't Give Up by Black Belt Eagle Scout, who we love here. So you hear your heart beating, you walk on.
tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
In October of 2022, the Vancouver Adapted Music Society held its flagship event, the Strong Sessions, for the fifth time. All Strong Sessions feature a variety of musicians with disabilities, paired with established local artists and bands. Each month until September this year, VAMS will be releasing the performances from our 2022 show on the Reimagine Radio YouTube channel, where you can also find past Strong Sessions content. To stay up to date with us, subscribe to the channel and drop a like to show some support.
Welcome back. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves, hosted by the Indigenous Collective on CITR 101.9 FM in Musqueam lands, labeled as Vancouver.
Yeah, so we have a spicy topic. We're starting off strong here with the East Coast Métis, quote-unquote, nation. Oh my gosh, there's so much to unpack over here. I think I'm going to start with their website, because that's the most crazy thing ever. So, I don't know how recent this website is. It looks pretty old. But, first of all, they give us a definition. Their definition, and it says, quote, a person of mixed blood, specifically a person of European and North American Indian ancestry, regardless of how many generations back, a person who self-identifies as and is accepted by the community, end quote. But you want to know the wildest part is below that. They have the official, or like, not really an official, but they have another definition that says a Métis citizen is distinct from First Nations, Inuit, and non-Aboriginal. Which is like, what?
Oh my god. It's just so aggravating when you think about their intentions in doing all of this. And it's pretty widely believed that, one, it's for some kind of attention that they want, but it's also for fishing rights and legal rights. Because they don't want to exercise those rights for traditional purposes. They want to be able to exploit the water and resources as much as possible and profit as much as possible.
Yeah, it's really quite sketchy. Not great. There's so much to unpack here. First of all, like, they said it themselves under their website, Métis are distinct. They're a distinct group of people. And, like, just because, like, you're half something doesn't make you Métis.
Yeah, that exact statement, like, explains why they are not Métis. Because we are a distinct people. That literally is like, okay, so it's not you guys.
Exactly. And I also found a quote here. I think it was from a CBC interview they did with one of the people, a part of the East Coast Nation. And she said, quote, he told me their dad. We had Indian blood in us, which makes us Métis, end quote. Which is very problematic. I think we're coming back to how problematic it is in that sense.
Yeah.
I think, go ahead.
Sorry, I just think it like gets into like the whole capital M Métis versus lowercase. And yeah, I mean, like, they're like, you can be mixed. You can be lowercase Métis. But I think they just forget that like capital M Métis is a distinct nation that like has Michif. Like, they don't speak Michif over there, and all this rich history. Not to deny them a rich history of themselves, but yeah, there's a little bit of confusion on the East Coast.
Yeah, like, there is a very distinct difference between what Ethan's saying is Métis lowercase, as in mixed, quite literally mixed Indigenous and European blood, versus capital M, the Métis Nation, which is just a sovereign entity. and kind of class, like we are our own nation. And like mentioned earlier, we probably wouldn't have this distinct sense of identity outside of Indigenous identity or European identity if it wasn't for the laws at the time that were designed to completely wipe out the Indigenous population of the Americas. They really hoped, they created most of the treaties with the intention that one day they won't have to worry about it because there wouldn't be any of us left. So when implementing these policies, the Métis Nation disrupted everything. The complete foundation of that ideology is disrupted by the existence of Métis people.
Yeah, and that's such a valid thing to say, all of you guys. Woo. I think... What did I have? Oh, okay, so I researched and I found the Pali test, which I did not know about. It can be colonial, but I think it actually wasn't invented by white people. So if I'm correct, if I'm wrong, then tell me, obviously. But basically there's categories to the Pali test, and in order to quote unquote pass it, you have to be an individual that, one, identifies as a Métis person, two, be an accepted member of present-day Métis community, and three, have ties to historic Métis community. And I think the second one is really important because, like, you could have, like, the paperwork and, like, trauma, so it's not easy to reconnect if you have trauma, but, like, just finding where you are and who you are in the community is especially important for yourself.
Yeah, and being an Indigenous person is so much more, when we get into the, it's just little bits of what's different between ethnicity and race. Indigeneity is, it isn't a race, but it's also an ethnicity. So that means that it's so much more than just your DNA, and to be a Native person in Canada is to be a part of, it's like being a citizen of a nation within a nation. You grow up within this separate legal and social system almost, and it's especially prevalent in education. And in my experience, this was not a negative thing. In my experience, this was what Ethan mentioned earlier, ABED, as we called it, Aboriginal education, which is the system for, we call it the list, if you were on the list, so parents have the option to say that their kids were Indigenous and you would be a part of this almost separate class at school. And that means you would go on different field trips and you would be required to do different things, different assemblies. And it was a really positive experience for me. But to be Native is not just to have DNA or to have heritage. It means to be a living person. It reminds me of Thomas King's metaphors for the three types of Indian, the live Indian, dead Indian, and legal Indian. The dead Indian is the caricature that a lot of Americans, I'd imagine, the feather headdress, the buckskin garments that people imagine. The live Indian is what we are today, and the legal Indian is the ones who fit into all of the legal categories and are very comfortable and digestible for the government to understand. And a lot of these Métis frauds seem to really base their identity off of the idea of the dead Indian instead of the live Indian.
Very interesting. And I think what frustrates me the most about the East Coast Métis is that, first of all, I'm not saying, like, all you have to have every single document to be Métis mm-hmm. or Indigenous, because, like, there's so many documents, and you might not have access to that, especially if you are poor or struggling in any single way. But I will say it frustrates me because I am a very, very European Métis, which I acknowledge. I do have that privilege. But explaining to my friends for so many years what Métis is, and then all these people get to say, oh, now I'm Métis.
It's so rough. I wrote a vent poem, I'm not going to read it, but in grade 10 about that, and it was a little targeted, but I feel like if you're a Métis person, you've definitely met people or have people in your lives who discovered that they had Métis heritage and then did whatever they could to exploit that. And maybe they got a job at Métis Nation, maybe they decided to start playing dress up in ribbon skirts and all of that. But there is so much of an argument about reconnecting, and my take on reconnecting is you need to sit back and learn. It's not your time to become an Indigenous filmmaker, become an Indigenous artist, become a powwow dancer. It's not your time to make a whole identity, and especially not a career around this identity that you just discovered that you have ties to. It's so much more about your living identity. And if you're a reconnecting person, you will know when you are as a part of community enough that you can partake in these things and start to branch out and maybe create a beadwork page or do those kinds of things.
I think a great thing that my professor last year, actually, Alana Cook, she's Métis as well. Love her. She's also a professional MMA fighter. But she explained it very eloquently. It's to be Métis, or to, like, if you're reconnecting, it's not about what you can get, it's about what you can give. And I mean, that's, like, at the core, I think, of a lot of most Indigenous values, and within, like, Métis frameworks as well. And it sums up a lot of what it means. A lot of people figure it out or, like, reconnect, and they're like, man, I'm going to get that funding, get that stuff. But it's more about, like, what you can give to the community.
Yeah, and I feel like it is very much our place as Métis people to not pretend that we don't have white privilege. I see far too often Métis people completely ignoring that we have the choice, most of us. There are many visibly Indigenous Métis people, including our own dad, but we aren't. So it's very important for us to know in our daily lives that we can choose when to tell people we are Indigenous. Like, when I go to a store, I don't get followed around for being Métis, because you don't know that unless I say that to you, or there's something very visibly saying that I am. And I feel like Métis people, it's almost like these people who find out later in life, they crave that kind of oppression, and they want this, like, fantasy of being oppressed and targeted. And we'll get into that later with things that Mary Ellen Turple-LaFon said about her dad being mistreated and a victim of racism when he was a whole white man, because she wanted to form this identity around oppression. And that's a very big issue in the Métis, in Métis identity, but especially in East Coast Métis. As soon as they claim the identity, they want to claim all of this oppression, and they feel it cannot be both. You can't say, I am white, I look white, I do not experience oppression for how I look, but at the same time, I'm an Indigenous person, and I'm a member of an Indigenous nation.
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to wrap up with something like that. I think it's definitely colonization of cultures, of fantasizing that oppression, which is very, very bad. I think that's not fun at all, not even fun to think about. I don't know why someone would do that. But yeah, you guys said it best. I think it's important, just because so many people, especially the East Coast, want that oppression. And it's like, even me, it's like, okay, I'm white. We have to accept that. Sit back, learn. And you have to know this is the place for you and this is not. And that's okay. Like, it's not like purposely excluding you. You just have to learn to listen.
Yeah, and it's okay to acknowledge that, and that doesn't make you less Indigenous to acknowledge that. But for some people, they really base their whole identity around that sort of thing. And then that comes to creating stories like Mary Ellen did about her dad. So I really want to talk about Métis Nation British Columbia. So this is the other side. Métis identity is usually defined around Rupert's Land, and Métis territory stops at the Rockies. It does not go past that into British Columbia very much at all. But there is this kind of wave of neo-colonialism, of Métis governments made up of, like I said earlier, these Métis people who, they descend from the white Métis, not the more Indigenous Métis. They descend from the much more white side who was able to assimilate into society and build generational wealth and build all of these systems. And Métis Nation British Columbia, I can tell from firsthand experience, I know people, it is riddled with these people who found out later in life and feign oppression. And I don't know if you are, Olivia, but are you a registered member with Manitoba Métis Federation?
I'm registered with Alberta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ethan and I are... It is a nightmare. Our dad is really old. He can't really even send an email, so it's really rough out here trying to do all this, but we are very opposed to getting registered with Métis Nation British Columbia, even though it is easier. I really wanted to read what Manitoba Métis Federation had to say about Métis Nation British Columbia, and this was in June of 2023. So I'll read this entire article. It'll be a little wordy, but I think this is very, very important for people to learn where Métis people stand, like Red River Métis, who are opposed to this new wave of colonialism, and we do not all agree with this. So MMF supports First Nations in denouncing Métis colonialism in British Columbia. Winnipeg, Manitoba, in the national homeland of the Red River Métis, recently, the Union of BC Indian Chiefs and the First Nations Summit passed mirrored resolutions, which the BC Assembly of First Nations will consider at their next assembly. Among other things, these resolutions deny the claims made by the Métis Nation of British Columbia and the BC Métis Federation, and their assertions that self-determining and self-governing Métis communities historically existed and continue to exist within the interior. Yeah, the interior, where we, Ethan and I, grew up. We'll have a lot to say about that. And on the coast. UBCIC and FNS went so far as to call the claims false, unfounded, and deeply offensive.
Yeah. BC is not Métis land, and I think a big part of being Indigenous is, and Métis is, positionality and recognizing where your homeland stops and where your traditional harvesting rights don't exist, and respecting, like, the First Nations that exist around you and being in good relations with them. And that involves not, like, fabricating historical homelands in order to access resources, because resource extraction, mm-mm-mm, that's no.
It's very exploitative, and I believe that Métis identity and Métis culture should, in BC and other places that are not traditionally Métis homelands, should be like, it's like when you go around the city and you see cultural centers for other cultures from around the world, because there's a big community of that there. Should be like that. We don't need land rights or harvesting rights, fishing rights in BC. I believe that that should be up to the First Nation of any given area to determine whether an individual should have those rights. It should not be granted to Métis Nation as a whole. And I do agree that that's very offensive to First Nations in BC to say, actually, because a few white and Native people had kids here like 100 years ago, this is Métis land and everyone should be able to hunt and fish as they please.
Well, I'm kind of shook because I'm privileged to say this is the first time I'm hearing about it. This is wild. I agree with you guys. There are parts of my family that are registered with them, but obviously, like, historically, we're not from BC. Mm-hmm. Like, and I agree with you guys that in calling this land Métis Nation is just trying to get things, which is not very, very good at all.
Not at all. I believe that in Métis identity, how our ancestors lived, like, we are Plains Cree, we are Nihiyawak, and it was alongside the rules and government of the Cree Nation. It was not this kind of more distinct entity at certain times, for cultural guidance specifically, I mean. I feel like this whole new wave of wanting these rights is, like you said, purely exploitative. It's not about what you can give to the community, it's what you can get from it and what you can take. And these people do not want these rights so they can respect the traditional cycles of harvesting and hunting practiced by First Nations in BC. They want to be able to catch as many salmon as they can without regulation. And that's just it in my mind. We'll get into some more. So history has shown that to date, our traditional territory exists within the historic Northwest, which may be a confusing term, but that refers to old politics of the Dominion of Canada, and this really is Eastern Canada when it says the Northwest. And this we can prove without a doubt. Manitoba Métis Federation had a dialogue with First Nations in BC, and to understand the struggles that they face in BC. The Red River Métis commits that we will not lay attempts to lay claim to traditional territory beyond the Rockies, as there is no proof of any such claim existing. And we wish to express that we respect the sovereignty that the First Nations in BC have over their ancestral lands. The MMF also disavows the colonial and invasive position statements being made by these so-called Métis organizations in BC, and stands in support of the First Nations as they vigorously fight to protect their traditional territories from illegitimate claims made by outsiders. Our people settled there after effective control, and there is no evidence we are aware of that can say otherwise.
I think it just comes back to, like, knowing when to listen. Like, you can exist, like, we're not telling you to go away, but we're also not telling you to steal resources and land that belong to the many First Nations people that have lived here for so long. Mm-hmm. It's like, sometimes you just need to sit back and listen, and that's okay.
Very much so. Like, Métis people in our historical areas have built a deep connection with the land over generations of living there, and especially with treaties and treaty history, it's even more offensive because BC is unceded land, a vast majority of it. So it was never actually given up to colonial powers at all. None of it. The Red River Métis is a distinct collectivity with a vibrant and well-documented history filled with struggles, triumphs, and sacrifices through our Red River Métis homeland. Although we may have common histories as allies and adversaries with First Nations, we are a distinct Indigenous people historically known as Les Michif, La Nouvelle Nation, and the Manitoba Métis. We have our own identity, language, and culture, institutions, and way of life through the historic Northwest. We stand proud and are not part of any other Indigenous collectivity. I was going to add earlier that with Métis government, I feel like how it should look, I don't think it really should be government in BC or Ontario or the Maritimes. But in Saskatchewan and Manitoba, it looks very different because those are our homelands. There should be governing bodies about hunting and fishing rights there. But in BC, it should just be cultural societies for Métis populations living in BC. We should not be trying to assert any rights or claim that this should also be recognized as our Indigenous homeland. It just doesn't make sense to me. As an Indigenous people, the Red River Métis have had and continue to have inherent rights of self-government, which extend to those living outside of our homeland and extend beyond arbitrary and artificial colonial borders that are not a part of our making and not of our choosing. The MMF wholeheartedly denounces the wrongful assertions made by MNBC and BCMF based on their misunderstanding of law, history, and identity. As of this release, there is no credible or written evidence nor oral traditions from our families of established and continuous Red River Métis settlements beyond the Rockies. The Red River Métis homeland does not extend beyond the Rockies, and the Red River Métis do not have claims to territories outside of our homeland. Rather, MMF is hoping to work with the First Nations in BC to negotiate a sheltering protocol that individual nations may sign on to that will respect their inherent laws. I'd like to emphasize that this is to protect First Nations from any claims from Métis government. So MMF, Manitoba Métis Federation, wants to make an agreement with BC First Nations to basically be sure that there will never be Métis colonial land claims in BC that go through anything like they are today. The MMF looks forward to having meaningful and respectful dialogue with First Nations in BC to work together to understand how our relevant Red River Métis rights outside our homeland can coexist in their province in a manner that upholds both First Nations and Red River Métis long-standing inherent constitutional and human rights, as well as the systems of government, titles, jurisdictions, and laws of the First Nations in BC.
Well, I definitely stand by this. This is a very thorough, very strong statement. I think there should be more BC Métis people in opposition of stealing land rights, because I think that's very important, especially to just, I guess, claim that in a positive way, being like, hey guys, we shouldn't be doing this. Maybe having some more initiative would be great.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we were, like, born and raised here in BC, and, like, we don't have that sort of rights. Like, it's just something you gotta respect. It's just, like, it should be pretty plain and simple, but it's just, I guess, when you have something like Métis Nation British Columbia. Not that everyone there is horrible, bad people, but it's at its core, it's a colonial institution, it's a colonial government, and there's people in there that want to extract the resources and undermine First Nations rights, especially in BC where it's unceded. And so I think it's just up to the members within Métis Nation British Columbia and Métis people in BC, whoever you are, just being more vocal and being like, hey, we don't have treaty rights, we don't have homeland rights here, like, just respect the First Nations of which you exist in, especially with here in British Columbia.
Yeah, and as I mentioned at the beginning, with how Ethan and I grew up, I don't think either of us at any time ever thought, wow, we should be getting instruction about our culture and our heritage because we are Métis people and we're here. We were very much raised with Siyok culture and teachings, and we were raised with Tsleil-Waututh language. And I'm so grateful that we both had the opportunity to learn Tsleil-Waututh instead of Nihiyawiyuan, because Nihiyawiyuan is the most spoken native language, and I believe it's in Canada. And I believe it's the only one that's not considered endangered, and that is colonial in and of itself. But I'm very glad that I was raised as a native person in the valley with the cultural teachings and guidance of the Soyuz Indian Band, which was the First Nation where we grew up. And I have never felt any grievances of, oh man, I wish they would have completely set things aside, because that's not the case for students of other heritage. Like, we had a foster sibling who was Inuit. And you would not expect for there to be specific instruction for every kid from every nation, but for some reason, Métis Nation expects that, and I think that's pretty ridiculous. Soon we'll get into Mary Ellen Elizabeth Turple LaFond, a former professor at UBC, and the plague of Métis frauds. It's time for a music break, and you'll be hearing How I Feel by The Hallucination.
Listen, cause it's much harder living it than listening to the hardships. So the heart's conditioned to condition the air. When the air that conditions keep cool, but the more tears, sometimes it clear the vision. Not what I see. Been a long time coming to drop, running, rocking, reaching new peaks so the youngest can finally summit. Climbing high above and then flying from it up to the skies and understanding the corruption and deconstructing the lies. I've seen this country decline, try to keep discussions confined. Hide the underside, over extract and try to undermine. Damn, but I still believe in the truth. Whether it's an MC in a booth or a PhD in the suit. Yo, when we yelling protest, tell them the feeling is peaceful. We profess, we protestify to the will of the people. Tell them what they must know. Turn it up loud when we bust blows. Not in hushed tones, speaking up, let the trust grow. Now you don't gotta tell me how you feel. Cause I can see it in your eyes. You don't gotta tell me that the pain is real. Cause I can hear it in your cry. Behind a separation from the fam, segregation on the land. It was all part of the plan, and the blood is on your hands. It's all divide and conquer, colonize and slaughter. Stabbing at the heart through the backs of our grandfathers. Now we see your daughters that are disappearing.
legalize abduction, you legalize the misery. So now you see the mystery is really not too complicated. Justice is unequally distributed. My observation, money could be made while the kids are steady oscillating, splitting up a family. It's now become an occupation, and it's been part of the occupation since residential schools enforced starvation. It's a nation with racism here since the start of it. Hard to let go cause it's carved in the heart of it. Relation to the land and our rise, we're a part of it. Roots where I stand, I could never depart from it. And you don't have to tell me how you feel, cause I can see it in your eyes, and they don't have to prove to me that the pain is real, cause I can hear it in their cries.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM in Musqueam territory, colonially labeled as Vancouver. We're going to be talking about Mary Ellen Elizabeth Turpo LaFond. She's a Canadian lawyer, former judge, and advocate for children's rights. She has won, it would take the rest of this episode to list off all of her awards and honorary degrees, but she got a Master's of Law from Harvard, and she became a professor here at the School of Law at UBC. She was put into the Order of Canada because her Indigenous activism, and she claimed she was born and raised on the First Nation Reserve of the Norway House Cree Nation in Manitoba. However, she was actually born in Niagara Falls, Ontario, according to interviews with childhood friends and everyone who knew their family. Nobody at Norway House Cree Nation knows anything about her. She claims that her father, William Turpo, was an Indigenous man who was discriminated against. And if you just look up pictures, he was a whole white man. And they've interviewed community members, family members who knew him, and they were all shocked to hear that the family is apparently Native. They were very, very surprised. At first, UBC stood by her, and there was some talk in my FNIS class at this time where my professor hinted at the fact that UBC was probably going to regret this decision, and they did. It's disgusting, and I honestly used to kind of fantasize about walking to class and seeing her and, like, going up to her and being like, we don't claim you as a Cree woman.
All of this. I was like, hoping I'd see her on campus when she's
banishment. There. Banishment.
Shame.
And it is a disease. There is a plague of Métis frauds, and we're also going to talk about Iskwe. Ugh.
Yeah, Iskwe or
Megan Meisters.
It's a very complicated topic because I just found out apparently, what's her name? Morin, the genealogist.
Gail Morin. If you're Métis, you know who she is.
Apparently, Gail Morin says she did have Métis ancestry.
Girl Gail is with her, then that's saying something. Gail is like one of our Métis knowledge keepers and elders, and I don't even know if anything comes up on social media when you look her up, but she's very known within the Métis Nation, so that's honestly pretty shocking to hear. But one of the biggest issues with Iskwe is her claiming the name Iskwe, and I'll let Olivia talk about what Lisa Muswagon said about Megan.
Yeah, so I found an article of someone, I think it was, like, on one of the Pretendians article. I'm sure you can Google this, but someone had found a Facebook, kind of like a Facebook thread of someone named Lisa Muswagon, who is a Cree musician, and she basically said that she basically demanded, I guess, which is a better word, that Iskwe stop using that name, and she basically claimed that a so-called Iskwe got the name from her and from her family. I'm sure there's a quote here. I can't find it now, but she basically claims that she stole the name, like, outright.
Yeah, just completely decided to name herself that, and that's absolutely disgusting to me. If you look up Iskwe, you will see so many pictures of her with what she called Inuit-style face paint and feathers, and it's honestly disgusting, and it's still not very known. She has a career still, and it's pretty bad. We'll have another episode where we dive a lot more deep into Pretendians. This one is more focused on Métis identity and why so many people claim it who are not. And I really wanted to play this CBC News clip. It's just 2 minutes long, and it talks about Carrie Bourassa, who was a very known figure. I'd say look her up, and you will probably recognize a picture of her from many, many articles about her.
About her rags-to-riches story.
I'm just going to say it. I'm emotional.
Bourassa leads an Indigenous health research lab at the University of Saskatchewan, all while observing Indigenous ceremony and tradition.
I'm Bear Clan. I'm Anishinaabe Métis from Treaty 4 Territory.
Bourassa told the crowd she grew up in Regina's inner city, where she and her family suffered the effects of racism.
We grew up in a really poor, disrupted family, and that was due to intergenerational trauma, and that caused addictions and violence.
Carolyn Tate is also a professor at the U of S. The Métis woman says she's worked with Bourassa for more than a decade and always believed she was Indigenous. But she says recently, some inconsistencies and changes in Bourassa's story led her and her colleagues to investigate Bourassa's genealogy. And they concluded Bourassa was not Indigenous at all.
It's embarrassing to think that we were so gullible and naive.
Bourassa claims that her great-grandmother came from a small Indigenous tribe in northern BC.
My great-grandmother was Tlingit. She married an immigrant.
But CBC News discovered the genealogical records tell a different story. Bourassa's great-grandmother was Johanna Salaba, who immigrated from Russia to Canada in 1911 with her mother and sister. She married Joseph Knezichek, who was also a Czech-speaking Russian. Dr. Winona Wheeler, a member of Manitoba's Fisher River Cree Nation, who also is a professor at the U of S, finds Bourassa's claims infuriating.
It is colonialism in its worst form, and it's a gross form of white privilege.
In a statement released after CBC's story published, Bourassa reiterated that she does identify as Métis, and she's hired a Métis genealogist to help her investigate her ancestry. She says the communities that she serves do not rely on, quote, blood quantum in order to assess who is truly Indigenous.
So my initial comments on that are, of course, the only one she actually claims and wants to be investigated is Métis identity, not her Tlingit identity, which she has formed most of her image on. It's the Métis identity, because anything that has white people involved is going to get messy. And unfortunately, the Métis Nation, that's literally the root of it. That is what it is. It's coming from a mixed lineage. So it gets messy, and it's...
Yeah, exactly. It's so frustrating because, oh my gosh, there's so much to unpack here. It's interesting because, you know, she didn't even have to hire a genealogist. Obviously, having the resources for that is sometimes a trouble, and you're not invalid because you don't have documents, but, this woman did not have any documents.
Mm-mm. And she's like, go find them for me, please.
Yeah.
And the main thing she formed her identity around was being Tlingit, because that scene is more, I imagine, in her eyes, exotic than being Métis. And then when it comes down to it and she's called for proof, that's what she claims. And there's this phrase, and of course there are exceptions, like if you have a really messed up family that is in complete denial, but I love the phrase, does your family know you're Native? Because I think it's so funny. And it's like, that's the solution to the Pretendian plague, is just, does your family know you're Native? Does your community know you're Native?
If someone asked that at a news conference, I think everything would stop.
Exactly. And if you ask an Indigenous person, if you ask their family, are you an Indigenous family? Are you Indigenous? Our families, I assume everyone would say yes. With some of those people, their families would probably say, oh, we have some grandma princess something back there, some heritage. But it's totally the difference, is whether or not you belong. You have somewhere where you belong to. We're just wrapping up right now, and we had so much more to get into, but we'll definitely do a much deeper exposé in Pretendians as a whole, and not just Métis identity claims. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Unceded Airwaves. Once again, this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. These are Musqueam lands that were colonially labeled as Vancouver. Our collective meetings are Thursday at 6, starting this Thursday at CITR, so come hang out. Email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca, if you want to get involved. We're looking for volunteers. You can work behind the scenes, or you can have your voice on the air, and you could be in front of a microphone like I am right now. Thanks for listening.
Bye.